Hey, good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Sunday Weekly Warm-Up, your weekly opportunity here in the exclusive teachbettergroup.com to get together to look ahead to a week of fun, excitement, and rewarding contributions in the education space, whatever your important role in education might be. My name is Brad Hughes, Teach Better team member and host of our Sunday Weekly Warm-Up tonight. Ray Heward is off this week, and joining me tonight is an incredible guest who contributes so much in the education space as a writer, as a speaker and presenter, as a podcaster and blogger, and as a trainer dedicated to teacher wellness and well-being. It's Angela Watson. So I know you'll be enjoying our time with Angela tonight. We have an incredible guest speaker announcement as well, and we are looking forward to getting into the conversation with you right after this. Don't go away. Happy Sunday, Teach Better family. This is the Sunday Weekly Warm-Up, streaming exclusively in our private Facebook group. We've got Julie joining us in the comments, and welcome, Julie. And wherever you might be joining us from, let us know who you are, where you are, what your role in education might be in the comments. If you have questions for me or for Angela as we get into conversation, we would love you to keep us posted and keep us on our toes by making your comments visible, and we'll make sure that you are celebrated as you join us tonight. So allow me to introduce our guest, Angela Watson. Angela, welcome into our Sunday Weekly Warm-Up space.
I'm so excited to be here and chat with you and just see what these questions are and have just a really inspiring, encouraging conversation.
Angela, as soon as I picked up your book, Awakened, which I found at a time where I desperately needed guidance and reassurance to address some of the challenges, many of the challenges that all educators face, I knew that I had to get in touch with you to introduce you to our Teach Better community, to find out more about you, to dig a little bit deeper on all of the incredible contributions that you make. So for those that may not know you yet well, Angela, could you let us know who you are, where you are, what you're up to, what your different roles might be, and what lights you up about your roles in education?
Sure. So I have the best job in the world for me, which is listening to teachers and creating resources and materials that support teachers. So I was in the classroom myself for 11 years, and then I was an instructional coach, which I've been doing now for over a decade. I'm the creator of the Truth for Teachers podcast. I have published 6 books for teachers. I've created the 40-hour Teacher Workweek program. We have a writers collective now on Truth for Teachers that really amplifies the voices of those who are in the classroom doing that important work. So I've just got lots of different things on my plate, lots of different curriculum resources and things, anything that I could do basically to make teaching more effective, efficient, and enjoyable. That's my passion. That's always been my passion. And now I get to do it full time. So it's pretty awesome.
Angela, when I reflect on your commitment, your passion to making teaching and educating relevant, rich, powerful, but also meaningful and manageable, did that commitment arise out of your own needs to make those changes for yourself? And you had opportunities to expand your influence? Tell me about sort of your origin story as an education superhero.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it had always been my dream to be a teacher since I was a little girl. I was one of the stereotypical, you know, kids who always wanted to play school and who, as soon as I learned something, I wanted to tell someone else. That was what I loved to do. And so once I got my first teaching job right out of college, I was surprised to see that, like, there was a lot of things that I had not been prepared for, a lot of things that I had not been told were going to happen. And those were the things that, you know, that really pull teachers' enthusiasm and distract them. I mean, people get into education because they want the creative outlet, because they love kids, because they're passionate about their subject matter. You know, there's lots of big, profound reasons why we get into the profession. But so much of the daily work is disconnected from that purpose. It's a lot of minutiae. It's a lot of mundane stuff. It's a lot of issuing reminders over and over. It's a lot of email and, you know, data entry and stuff that, like, you know, it's hard to stay focused sometimes on what it is that's really bringing you satisfaction and what's really moving the needle for kids. And so, yeah, my work totally came out of searching for those materials. So it was actually, my website will be 20 years old this summer. I started it in 2003. And I was a third year teacher at the time. And at that time, there were not a ton of resources out there for teachers. And I was just sharing things in message board forums. And I started, my school bought a digital camera, which was new technology at the time. And I got to borrow it and use it to take pictures of my classroom and upload them to a website, which was, again, a pretty new thing that wasn't commonly done, and started sharing ideas for how do I organize things and how do I set up my room? How do I manage all the little things that no one had told me how to do? But if you don't know how to do them, particularly in the elementary level, it will just consume your entire day. You can spend the whole day trying to get kids to line up. So I just really wanted to share those practical tips. And my website just really grew organically based on those conversations I was having with other educators online and just trying to curate the best of the best that was out there. And what a change there has been over the last 20 years in terms of opportunities to do that. I mean, something like this would have been unimaginable for me then. So I just think it's so cool the way that teachers have just continued to share ideas, continue to grow, and continue to find ways to connect with each other online. And for those who have been doing this for a long time, you remember the days when that was not so easy to do. And it comes with a special level of gratitude, I think, to have those kinds of connections and to be able to have the community.
Angela, when you think about the needs of educators in that community that you're growing and curating, what needs are coming to the fore, especially in our post-pandemic world of community stress and distress and just the changing landscape in education that makes, you know, teaching more and more challenging, but hopefully more and more rewarding as well?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's definitely changed over the years. A long time ago, I felt like it was more classroom management, as I was just saying, some of the practical stuff. And then I started moving more into the mindset piece, because I realized you could be doing the right things, but if you weren't showing up in the classroom as someone who had done your own work, who had examined your own thoughts, your own biases, your own, just the way that you think about the world and the way you see the world, and how that impacts your teaching, those strategies aren't going to work. Who you are matters as much as what you do. So I started really noticing more mindset challenges and then more time management challenges, which is when I started creating the 40-hour teacher work week, because teachers needed systems to manage things. Over the last couple of years, and then particularly since the pandemic, one of the main concerns, one of the greatest needs that I see for teachers are support with time, energy, and attention management. Not just for themselves, but for their students, because it's so difficult to get kids to really engage, to complete their work on time, to feel that sense of motivation and satisfaction. There's been a real shift over the last couple of years in the way that students show up in the classroom themselves. And I think there's been a lot of talk about, you know, from at a political or district level about like getting back to normal, right? And kind of like going back to where we were before. But educators, of course, don't want that. Educators know what we had before wasn't all that fantastic in 2019. Like teachers and kids were struggling. We had some big challenges back then too. And we've got to envision something better. We've got to have the imagination to create the kind of schools that teachers and kids deserve, and where they're sort of co-thriving together, where we're not pitting teachers against students, but we're sort of coming alongside students as educators and saying, listen, I know it's really hard to put down your phone and get this assignment done, that it's just it's never going to be as engaging as TikTok. It's just not. Like, you know, I use TikTok myself. Like, I know how how much more enjoyable that is than, you know, doing an assignment or writing something and saying, hey, you know, managing our attention and prioritizing tasks and getting things done is something that adults struggle with too. And most of us have never really been taught how to manage this. We're just expected to just handle everything that's on our plates. And I feel like kids are the same way. So if teachers and kids can learn about these things together, experiment together, grow alongside them together, that's what I feel is really going to make a big difference. And that's what I'm really passionate about working on right now, is resources for that.
One of the true gifts of being in education is the opportunity to grow and learn alongside young people and colleagues. And I often say, as much as young people might be changed by our influence, we too are forever changed by their influence on us. And what an awesome mission statement to grow school communities where educators and young people alike can co-thrive. And what I'd like to do after a quick break is to dive into discussion around what it takes to create communities where educators and students can thrive together. And I want to dig deeper into that mindset. So Angela and everyone, stay tuned. We'll be back after this quick break. Good evening, everybody. You are with the Sunday Weekly Warm-Up, streaming exclusively at teachbettergroup.com on Facebook. And I'm with an incredible guest, author, educator, speaker, consultant, blogger, and podcaster, Angela Watson. And joining us tonight are Brittany in the comments. Welcome, Brittany. And Hannah is with us. And if you are joining us, let us know where you're joining us from. We want to hear from you. If you've got questions, if you've got comments, if you've got put-ups and shout-outs, we want to make sure that Angela is celebrated and welcomed here in our space. And Angela, before the break, we were elaborating on your website, truthforteachers.com, as well as all of the incredible offerings that are connected with your work there, including coursework called the 40-Hour Workweek. You have a podcast, Truth for Teachers. You have a number of courses that you are authoring and co-authoring with others. And I've got this book in my hand here. This is Awakened, the second edition of Awakened. And it's Awakened, Change Your Mindset to Transform Your Teaching. And as we got on air, I was telling you what a difference this book and the accompanying Audible audio version of the book have meant for me as an educator and as just a person who is striving to thrive. I wonder if you can talk with me a little bit just to get the conversation started as we dig deeper on mindset. What kind of mindset work would you advocate for in terms of helping educators be and remain at their best?
So I think it's really important to understand what mindset influences and what mindset cannot fix. So when I initially published this book, it was in 2010. And at that time, there weren't a ton of resources about mindset, particularly for educators. This wasn't something that we were quite so commonly talking about. But over time, as things like self-care became big, right? That was like right before the pandemic. And, you know, positivity, positive thinking, that sort of thing, you know, really started to infiltrate education spaces and education books. And what I started to notice was that there were a lot of teachers who perhaps inadvertently, this was maybe not the author's intention, but teachers were walking away from these kinds of resources and feeling like if this person is saying to me, if I'm not happy in my job, it's my fault. And if I'm stressed out or I feel like I don't have the resources I need, I just need to change my thinking and it'll be better. And if I'm still unhappy, then it's all on me. And so that's the direction that I've seen a lot of mindset work go now that we're in 2023, is a lot of people pushing back against that and recognizing that, you know, you can't just positive think your way out of everything. You can't reframe everything. You really have to know what thoughts are serving you, what thoughts are not serving you, when do you need to change your thinking, when do you need to change your circumstances, when do you need to make a plan to do something different, when do you need to stand up for yourself, when do you need to advocate for change. So all of these pieces are part of mindset, and that's what I really wanted to get at in the second edition of the book, was really talking more about the not so much the limits of mindset work, but knowing when to apply it. And really releasing yourself from any kind of guilt over not being able to have control over your thoughts that you think you're supposed to. There's a lot of pressure in education to be happy all the time, especially at the elementary level. To be smiling, to be enthusiastic, you're supposed to love your job. And if you don't love your job, you think there's something wrong with you. And that's just not the case. So I think there are ways to sort of embrace all of those feelings, to not try to only stay in the positive realm, but to be really authentic in who you are, be in touch with all of your emotional experiences. All emotions are part of the human experience, and learning how to use the ones that are more uncomfortable or more unpleasant to push you toward needed change is really useful. And then trying to really maximize the things that do bring you joy, to look for those moments that bring you satisfaction and help you feel encouraged, and to stay in those spaces more often, but to not feel like you have to be there all the time, because it's just not realistic. And with the challenges of the profession and of just society in general right now, I think it's unrealistic to expect yourself to be happy every single day. So learning how to deal with that sort of roller coaster of emotions and all the ups and downs of the day, I think are really important.
Angela, one of the risks of self-care for educators specifically that I think that we're experiencing is when well-meaning supporters and providers of mental and healthcare support for educators simply send reminder emails about looking after yourself or newsletters that tell you how you should be structuring your time. For busy educators, it can become one more thing that we don't have time to do. And then it can reinforce that sense of hopelessness that I can't even get my self-care right. But what I want to say about my experience with you just on the air in the past few minutes, but also reading the book and listening to the Audible podcast, is you truly accompany the reader and the listener as someone who empathically and practically gets it. And the other thing I find really magical about your work is how you've been able to weave all different kinds, not only of practical advice, but, you know, for educators like myself who may have had experience with cognitive behavioral therapy or dialectical behavior therapy or ACT, you weave therapeutic approaches. Now, you refer to therapeutic approaches that may be of benefit that give readers and listeners an opportunity to dig a little bit deeper. I wonder how did you come to weave all of both the practical as well as the therapeutic lens into your work in this book, Awakened?
You know, Brad, I think that's just how my brain works, honestly, because I feel like I kind of do that all the time. Like that's just my approach. It's just my writing style. And cognitive behavioral therapy, as you mentioned, was really, really influential in me when I really started working on mindset back around 2010. Well, a little bit before then, probably like 2008, 2009, I started really doing deep dives into it. And CBT was super helpful for me. And an example of that is like, it's sort of like reframing your thoughts. So instead of saying like, you know, this is so unfair, I can't possibly deal with this. It's like, this is unfair, but I am dealing with it. I'm handling it right now. And I can make a decision about how I want to show up in this moment. How do I want to respond? And so it's sort of like reframing things and sort of taking back your power a little bit. So CBT is really helpful. And then in recent years, ACT, as you mentioned, acceptance and commitment therapy, has also been really helpful for a lot of people, particularly in those kinds of situations in which you cannot reframe your thinking. You know, if you have, you know, 45 students in your class, there's no way to just reframe that to make that okay or more bearable. I mean, there's certainly things that you can do, but it's not going to fix it. And so acceptance and commitment therapy can really help with that, because that's where you practice this radical acceptance of, this is my reality. This is what's happening. That doesn't mean it's okay. That doesn't mean that I'm going to just accept it the way that it is, but this is my reality. And once I accept that, I can make the commitment to my behavior, to what am I going to do? And if this is something that's not sustainable for me, do I want to look for another job? Do I want to approach the principal about, you know, splitting classes or getting an A? What do I want to do? Or do I want to just tough it out until I can find another job? But like really accepting where you're at and not necessarily trying to frame it in a different way, but just accepting things, the good and the bad altogether, and then deciding on your course of action instead of falling back into this powerless position where it's like, I can't do anything about it. It's out of my hands. You know, the district said, my principal said, it's really stepping back into your own power and finding your own agency in situations that are really challenging. So all those kinds of mindset therapies have been really, really helpful for me.
Angela, not only are you an adept and a gifted writer and creator, but you've got an amazing sense of humor. Like, I was startled to learn early in your book, and I laughed out loud and shared this with my loved ones as well, that I was surprised to learn that I don't necessarily have to believe everything I think. That is you write just as you wouldn't normally take at face value or accept everything and anything that others say to you or about you, nor do you have to pay attention to and believe everything you think and you write. You are not your thoughts. Educators are deep thinkers and feelers. And I wonder how you advise teachers to really monitor their self-talk and really maybe not pay attention to what they're thinking and feeling so much, maybe not take everything at face value.
So that this idea that you are not your thoughts, you are the watcher of your thoughts, really comes from Buddhism, specifically Zen Buddhism. The way that I've studied Buddhism is through secular Buddhism, so it's not tied to any kind of religion. It's more of like a philosophy or a way of being. And that's one of the big principles, is that the things that you are experiencing are not you. Your thoughts are not yours because other people have thought them before. So there's other people who are thinking the same thing. These are just thoughts. So they're just floating around. You don't have to hold on to them. You can just let them go. You can notice them and say, oh, I just had this thought that, you know, I really don't want to do this, or, you know, this is a really unpleasant experience, and just notice it. You don't have to make it a big deal. You don't have to address it. You can just sort of let it pass. And, you know, that's part of the principle of detachment as well, of like not holding on to expectations too tightly, letting things be, going back to radical acceptance. It's all kind of tied in there together. And noticing that, like, you can choose your thoughts. If you have this really weird thought, you're like, why am I like still harping on this argument that I had with a parent? Or why can't I let this thing go with this kid? That's not you. That's just a thought. And you don't have to make it mean something about you. You don't have to get down on yourself and say, you know, I can never let things go. And I'm so this, I'm so that. It's just a thought. Just let it pass and choose a different thought that you want to focus on more. So that's something that really, it comes with practice, but I feel like letting go of judgment is the most important thing, because then you cannot judge yourself when you mess up on this. And when you find yourself getting like really fixated and you're like replaying arguments in your head or like rehearsing what you're going to say the next time you see this parent that you had a conflict with, don't judge yourself for it. Like this is a normal human experience. The goal is just to notice those thoughts. Don't attach importance, don't attach meaning, and don't identify with them. They're not you. They're just thoughts.
Angela, in Awakened, you empowered me, like a true gift, with 4 interventions when I can catch myself in thoughts that are not serving me especially well. And I wonder if you can dig with me into those 4 approaches to catching yourself and intervening before your thoughts become a roller coaster. One of them is simply rejection. You can reject a thought.
Sure. So you can just decide, this is just silly. You know, I'm thinking this thought, it's not helpful at all. And I choose not to think that. So this is especially useful if you're thinking something that's really judgmental about yourself or about another person. You know, maybe a thought pops into your head, like, there's no way I could do this. I'm so bad at this. There's no way I'm going to figure this out. You can say, that's not true. I figure out stuff all the time. I'm always learning new things. And I reject this thought that came into my mind that I'm not going to be able to do it. It's not true.
In addition to rejection, we could reframe or kind of rethink our thoughts, and we can tell ourselves a different story. We can use sense of humor. We can use other strategies depending on the need and depending on the severity and depending on our specific circumstances, we can use these tools. And those tools have been a real gift for me as I am a recovering overthinker.
I'm
also someone who ruminates on things that haven't gone well. And I'm also a huge conversation scripter. So what if the conversation goes this way or that way? And just, you know, I think as I said before, as educators, we're deep thinkers and deep feelers. We want things to go well for ourselves and for the kids in our care. We want to present ourselves in the best possible light to everyone. That the stakes are high, but you know, your work is definitely helping everyone just really settle into the process of educating as part of a bigger part of a bigger way of life.
Yes, that I appreciate you saying that so much, and I think that, you know, being able to trust yourself in the moment is really, really important. Say, I don't know the answer now. I don't know what I would do if this would happen. I don't know exactly what I'm going to say tomorrow, but I trust that I will know when the time comes, and start to notice all of those times when you are able to show up, when you're able to make a snap decision, or when you're able to handle an uncomfortable situation or a confrontation. And that builds your confidence. So the next time you can learn to trust yourself. That has been a really key practice for me in avoiding the overthinking, because I am the same way. Like if there could be like 10 different ways that something can go, I need to hash them all out of my mind. I need to plan them all out. How am I going to respond? What am I going to do if this happens? What if this happens? And just saying, okay, I don't know yet. I don't have to think through every single scenario because I trust myself. I've handled so many tough situations, as has every single person listening to this. I can trust myself. And if I don't do the optimal thing, I can also forgive myself and keep moving forward. It's not going to be the end of the world. And just really working on that self-trust has been super important to me, because I just didn't have that at all when I was younger.
Angela, why might it be so hard for educators to say no or not yet when it comes to setting barriers or boundaries around their responsibilities? And how has the 40-hour work week evolved to help educators make and set those boundaries?
So I think a lot of it is just the culture of education, which is that it's supposed to be a calling. You're supposed to do it because you're passionate about it and you love it. But with that goes the assumption then that you don't need to be compensated and that you'll be happy to do things above and beyond. And, you know, there's a lot of guilt tripping in education where it's like, you know, do it for the kids and, you know, whatever it takes for the kids. And that is a recipe for burnout when teachers are under-resourced. If we had the resources, the funding, the staffing that we needed, sure, I'm all on board with that. But in reality, it's going to be really tough. So that is where the 40-hour teacher work week comes in. It's really about like setting boundaries and really trying to maximize your contractual hours. So this is focused less on the mindset piece. I have a book called Fewer Things Better, The Courage to Focus on What Matters Most. That hits more on the mindset piece and more of the cultural expectations for teachers and why it's so hard to say no and set boundaries. This program, 40 hour, is really more of the practical strategy. So what do you do? Like how you can't just walk out the door at 3 o'clock and say, I'm not going to take anything home. It's still going to be there the next day. There really has to be ways that you are streamlining, simplifying, eliminating tasks, delegating tasks. And that's what 40 hour is designed to help K-12 teachers do, is figure out ways to simplify grading, lesson planning, documentation, all those sorts of things. And this was just such a labor of love that I started back in 2015. Did a complete revamp on in 2020, which I had planned to do that year anyway. And then when the pandemic hit, I was like, okay, it's a good thing we're updating all of this, but it has just grown over the years with input from teachers and including their ideas, their classroom practices. It's really trying to just surface the best principles for teachers in terms of productivity, time management, and prioritization, as well as having that freedom to be able to say, I'm going to prioritize other things in my life besides just my job. And I can still be a great teacher and do great things for kids while having a personal life. And in fact, taking time for myself outside of school does make me a better teacher. And the world's not going to fall apart if I don't keep doing all the things that I've been doing. That's a trust exercise too, where you have to take that bold step forward and say, okay, what happens if I don't do this? You know, people are used to me doing this thing and realizing, oh, like, you know, the earth is still spinning. Like, you know, it's going to be okay. Like the way that I've done things is not the way it has to be. There are other ways that I can try and I can experiment. And just opening teachers up to different possibilities of ways to do their job instead of just assuming the way that it's always been done is the way that it has to be, I think is super, super powerful. Because when you are stuck in that day-to-day grind, you don't have the mental bandwidth to think big picture. Like, when are you doing this big, you know, visioning? Like, let me revamp all these classroom procedures to make them more efficient. When are you doing that? You know, like maybe July, maybe August, like that's it. You really don't have time for that. And so if I can be the person who can see the forest and the trees and create those kind of systems and set them up, and then all you have to do is personalize them, my hope is that makes it a lot easier so that every teacher is not reinventing the wheel. If so many folks have all the same issues because they're systemic and institutional issues, then we should have systemic and institutional solutions. It shouldn't be all on individuals. So we have the 40-hour teacher work week for that. And then we also have the 40-hour leadership program, which is for administrators to streamline expectations school-wide. So that teachers are not doing this on their own, as well as 40 hour for instructional coaches to help them streamline their workload and also to support teachers. So it's my vision that there will be more and more schools every single year who understand the importance of supporting teachers in this, of not just doing exactly what you said, Brad, of like sending out this email of like, don't forget to take care of yourself. Like, okay, but you didn't take anything off my plate. So when am I supposed to take care of myself? Like, there has to be a change in the culture of the school where we're all prioritizing impact. And we're looking to see, do we really need to have this meeting? Are these committees really necessary? What are our email protocols? Can we set boundaries and just tell parents right at the start of the school year, coming from administration, teachers respond to emails between, you know, 9 and 4 or whatever your contractual hours are, so that teachers don't feel like they have to respond on weekends. There are really, really small but powerful things that can be done at both a classroom level and at a school level that can make a big difference for teacher morale and teacher burnout. So I just want to keep surfacing those kinds of practices and amplifying the work of the schools who are doing that kind of stuff, because they are out there. And I feel confident that, you know, as we keep, you know, facing the teacher attrition crisis, that we're going to see more and more administrators realize we can't keep just having this, you know, teacher turnover at the rate that there is. we have to keep these folks. These people are dedicated. They love their job and we're making it harder for them. So how do we keep these folks in this profession that they love? And I want to throw all my support behind that because there's so many folks who want to be in the classroom, who want to stay, but they've got to have systemic change. They have to have support and resources.
Angela, right after this break, we're going to be making a Teach Better conference announcement. And then to conclude our time together, I would love us to brainstorm how teachers and educators listening and watching tonight can begin to take action on this call to prioritize looking after oneself as a gateway to making sure we're looking after the young people in our care. So stay tuned. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this quick message. Welcome back. You're with the Sunday Weekly Warm-Up here exclusively at teachbettergroup.com. It's Teach Better Teams exclusive and private Facebook. But have no fear, if you happen to miss tonight's episode live, you can catch it tomorrow at this time, 8 Eastern. It's going to be available as a replay on all of our channels, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, and LinkedIn, as well as magically transformed into an episode of Teach Better Talk. You're with Brad Hughes from Ontario, Canada, Chief Encouragement Officer and school leader and a member of the Teach Better team. And I've got the great privilege of talking with educator, author, podcaster, content provider, creator, and champion for educators, Angela Watson. And Angela, we're going to be just taking a second to celebrate and to shift conversation to taking action. But I need to take action right now with your patience and being along for the ride as we announce a new conference speaker for Teach Better 23. That's coming up this October in Akron, Ohio. Teach Better 23, a conference where educators come together to share time, expertise, and get aligned with the spirit of better today and better tomorrow. So here is our keynote featured speaker announcement. Stay tuned.
Peace, James Miles, he, him, fresh professor. Teachers can expect to hear from me at the conference. Fun, laughter, love, vulnerability, and exciting wisdom. My favorite thing to eat on when I'm snacking or traveling is Twizzlers, of course. Best piece of advice ever got was to live, love, and laugh all the time, every day.
Peace, greetings, John Robinson, 1/4 of the Avengers. So what should teachers expect from me at the 2023 Teach Better Conference? Definitely expect lots of creativity, unique experience filled with innovation, something like you've never witnessed before in the realms of education, and lots of energy, of course. What is your biggest fear? One of my biggest fears is to not be able to express myself by using my voice, not be able to share my narratives and ideas with the world, and not being able to be my authentic self. If I wasn't able to do these things, I couldn't be me. And that's a scary thought.
What you can expect from us at Teach Better 23 is, of course, energy, but also instruction and strategies that'll help you in the classroom. Things that can be implemented to help bond with your students, things that can maybe make a class or a subject easier. My favorite travel snack is either going to be some pistachios without the shells, or some skinny pop poppers.
Teach Better, that's it. Jay Rawls, part of the Edvengers. What do I love to do? What do I love to do? Music, records, vinyl, DJ. What's my favorite travel snack as I head to Teach Better 23? Twizzlers. And yo, what's my biggest fear? My biggest fear is you not hearing me and you not being at Teach Better 23. I'll see you there, Jay Rawls.
Some big news, Teach Better family. Not one, two, three, but four Edvengers as featured speakers at this October's Teach Better 23 conference. The Edvengers join our other featured speakers, Rizzo, Kimberly Carthens, and CJ Reynolds, our keynote, who is going to be incredible. We have an incredible lineup of guest speakers, as well as educators just like you, contributing your own thoughts, your own feelings, your own experiences coming together. Once again, that's Teach Better 23 in Akron, Ohio, this October. All of the information is at teachbetterconference.com. And Angela, you're an experienced conference speaker and provider as well. And I would like to just dig into a conversation with you about your Truth for Teachers podcast. We've been laying down some truth for teachers in our previous segments, including the fact that educators can and probably should take steps to prioritize their own health, well-being, and balance so that they can continue to pour that love, care, and attention into the kids we serve. What is Truth for Teachers all about, and what kind of truths are you laying down in that podcast?
So what I wanted to do with Truth for Teachers is try to amplify the voices of the folks who are in the classroom. So we have a writers collective, which is a diverse collection of K-12 teachers all over the country and a couple international folks as well, who just write about what is working in their classroom, how are they handling new legislation, new challenges that are coming up. They write on everything from DEI type of issues to classroom management to practical lesson tips to mindset tips that they've really found helpful to their productivity and organizational strategies. So it's a lot of writing from the heart and just sharing exactly what is going on in their classroom. So I'm just feel very privileged to be able to have such awesome teachers in our collective who are sharing their ideas. And I have them often on my podcast. So the podcast is every other week. It's every other Sunday now. It used to be weekly, but we just recently changed it up so that I can focus on some other projects. But I do a nice mix of featuring classroom teachers. I have solo episodes, and then occasionally I will bring in guest experts as well, who will talk about just different topics that they care about. This one that we're showing right here on the screen is with Elena Aguilar of the Bright Morning podcast. She is just a phenomenal human being, and she was on my most recent episode, and that was a great conversation as well. Just talking about what it means to bring your best self to the classroom and to show up as the best version of yourself for kids. What does that look like? What does that mean? So I'm trying to really hit at holistic topics, right? We talk a lot about the whole child. What about the whole teacher, right? It's not just about what you do. It's about who you are, and really nurturing all those aspects of teachers as human beings. I just think is so, so important in sustaining teachers' work. So that's the type of stuff that we try to amplify.
Angela, I just put a comment up from our guest, Brittany Hodges, talking about a shift in our discussion as we wrap things up to some practical strategies, some takeaways either that educators can use to boost their upcoming week or maybe take some steps as they contemplate the end of the school year and shift into next school year. Brittany says that self-care is a learning process and an adjustment as an educator. The feeling of guilt and letting others down when making decisions to take care of me first is hard. And let me tell you, Brittany and Angela, I feel that because I'm in a personal professional position where I'm fueled by service, but I also recognize that where I need to continue to grow is in service to myself so that I can serve others. And Angela, are you hearing from educators that putting ourselves first is tricky? And what do you recommend to educators that they might do just to make a small start to putting their own needs first?
Definitely. There's that messaging that, you know, it's teachers versus kids. Or, you know, particularly since we have a woman-dominated profession, there's a lot of baggage around women prioritizing their own needs, particularly over caretaking needs, this idea that you wouldn't get all your joy and satisfaction from taking care of others, that you might actually want something for yourself, is something that we've gotten a lot of cultural messages around that. That have infiltrated the entire teaching profession, including the men in the profession. Those expectations have really trickled out to everyone where, you know, there's this feeling that you're being selfish if you're thinking about yourself. one really practical idea is to think about ways that don't involve you making choices between you and other people. And one of the most powerful ways to do that is really just practicing presence. And it sounds like, sort of like this woo-woo thing, not very helpful, but it's actually really powerful, because one of the reasons that we get to this point where we need a lot of self-care or we need a lot of me time is because we haven't had a second to ourselves during the day. And a lot of times when we haven't had a second to ourselves during the day, it's because when we do have that second, we immediately fill it with something else. So it's like, I have 2 minutes in between classes. Let me check email, you know, or I'm sitting at a traffic light, or I'm waiting in a doctor's office. I have, 90 seconds in which no one's asking me anything. I don't have to do anything. I could just be. And what do I choose to do? I get out my phone, right? And start scrolling and start looking for more information that now I have to process, more things I have to respond to. Now I have yet another thing that's on my mind. So learning to just be present and to notice your own needs in the moment, I think, is one of the most powerful things for teachers. And this costs you no time, and it doesn't involve you having to say no to other people, which I think at this point, educators have already said no to a whole lot of things. And it's kind of stretching the limit now of how much more they can say no to, because there's just so many demands. So think about it as just practicing presence, of noticing, okay, I have this moment in my classroom where my students are working. I can either, create something else for myself to do, or I could just take 10 seconds and just breathe, look around the classroom. Look at your hard work paying off. Like, the kids are getting something done. You taught them how to do something and they're doing it. Even if it's like literally just for 10 seconds before everything goes off the rails again, right? Like, take that moment and don't just immediately jump into, what's that kid over there doing? Or what do I need to do over here? Or look at this messy area of my classroom. Just notice what's happening. Be present in that moment. If you have dismissal duty, when you're standing outside and you're bored, appreciate that moment of boredom. Appreciate that moment where you're not doing anything. Be there in that moment and give yourself time to decompress. Because especially with the shortage of sleep that so many people, Americans specifically, are functioning on so little sleep, so little rest, and so little quiet time. Like, there's just constantly noise and stimulation, that even just taking, just a minute or two here and there, instead of picking up your phone or instead of immediately trying to engage in a task, just be present, let your brain decompress a little bit, process what's been going on, allow your mind to wander, allow yourself to be, not hearing any podcasts, any TV, any radio, have just like a little bit of silence in your day. I mean, that's something that if you think about our ancestors throughout history, the majority of their day was spent with only the sounds of the natural world around them. And now we just have constant talking, noise, music, ads, this stuff all the time. And we really need that break. So if you are feeling like you need more self-care and you're kind of at the limit of what you feel like you can say no to, and that doing anything more is really just going to cause the people around you to suffer in ways that you're just not willing to make that trade-off, consider looking for those small moments during the day that you're trying to just actively fill with more stuff, and see if you can practice presence. Be mindful in that moment. Just breathe, just be. And really practice it, because it's not something that comes naturally in this culture. It's not something we're trained to do. And there's not a lot of cultural, societal pressure to do those things. The pressure is to stay busy. So you really have to be countercultural here and say, what I need in this moment is just silence. I just need 2 minutes to myself in which I'm not immediately picking up my phone and going back into email just because, I have a free second. Take some of those short moments for yourself, and you may find that you don't need as much of the longer times to recuperate, because you've had those little moments all throughout the day. And then you're not waiting until the end of the day. You're not waiting till the weekend, or worse, waiting until summer break to finally get a minute for yourself. Really try to seize those moments of presence all through the school day.
Angela, you're truly a gifted contributor and creator in all those different spaces and all those different channels. And I would love you to just take an opportunity to let listeners and viewers know how they can get connected and stay connected with you to benefit from all that you offer.
So the best place to go is truthforteachers.com. You can find links to everything there on my social media channels. I'm on all the places, all the things. I don't post a lot, in keeping with my motto, a fewer things better. I try to not overwhelm people with a ton of messaging, but I do have a presence on there. You can find the podcast there, the books, the courses, the 40-hour teacher work week, and so on. So it's all at truthforteachers.com.
I also want to give you a shout out, because your newsletters are awesome. And you really walk the talk, Angela. Like, you incorporate and you connect with feedback from your registrants, from your clients, from your readers and listeners. And the work that you do is truly authentic. It's truly needed. And I feel really, really blessed to have the opportunity to introduce you to our Teach Better family and community tonight. And to get to talk with you personally, you know, getting to talk personally with an author and contributor, it's meant so much to me personally and professionally in the last school year. It's truly an honor. So what's firing you up, and what's delighting you about the week ahead as we turn the page from Sunday to Monday?
I am spending this coming week preparing for the first 40-hour Teacher Workweek online summit, which we have never done before. Wow. That is going to be my focus in the coming week. We've got our presenters all lined up. It's just time for me to create the page and start putting the word out there. But we're going to have 25 of our members, who are all K-12 classroom teachers, sharing their best tips for efficiency and just how they manage stuff and get stuff done. So it's going to be really short presentations, like 15, 20 minutes, and it's all free. So I'm really excited to be able to offer that. And again, just surface these great practical strategies. So that's going to be my next area of focus in this coming week, is really figuring out the framing on that and how do I want to put it out there. Because like I said, it's the first one. I've never done anything like that. And I'm just, the ideas that they're sharing are so phenomenal. It's really got me fired up.
Angela, I hope that you feel refreshed and also rewarded by connecting with those folks on the 40-Hour Live. And it's been a delight to connect with you. And I wish you the very, very best in all that you do. And please know that you're making a difference to so many. And I hope that you feel uplifted and energized by those opportunities as well.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Brian.
Teach Better family, thanks for joining us for this week's Sunday Weekly Warm-Up. We're looking forward to reconnecting with you on Wednesday morning. It's the Wednesday Wake Up with Ray and Jeff, as well as all of the Teach Better goodness for Teach Better Conference is at teachbetterconference.com. Make sure you like and subscribe wherever you watch and listen, and we'll look forward to connecting with you in a week's time here on the Sunday Weekly Warm-Up. Have a great week, everyone. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.